Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Crazy, crazy, and crazy martinis today for conservatives. The first one is dealing with the media, as is the second one, actually. And Jim, we start with the news yesterday. Apparently, Bill Kristol heard our Three Martini Lunch yesterday and decided that it was his time to kind of slip out his surprise candidate. He leaked it to Bloomberg Politics. The choice, apparently, although the candidate himself has said nothing so far, is your colleague, David French, who guest hosted for you when you were at the NRA convention. So if he can be president, your dream of becoming world dictator is not far away. So we will discuss the merits of a potential David French candidacy when and if he makes a decision on this. But I will refer to a tweet by your other colleague, Jonah Goldberg, who said, "I'm not sure a David French run makes sense for him or conservatives. I'm 100% sure he's 1,000% more honorable than Clinton or Trump." And he's certainly correct about that. But the media reaction to the possibility of a French run has been predictably despicable here, Jim, with some being aghast that before David French went on his year-long deployment to Iraq in service to this country, he and his wife actually drew up some rules to protect the framework of their marriage while they'd be separated for a year. And then they are just aghast that he didn't have a Wikipedia page and they're not quite sure who he is. So clearly he can't possibly be elected president. So way to go, media. You lived exactly up to our incredibly low expectations.
Regardless of whether David French decides to run, and for those listening, you know, as I just said a short while ago on CNN, as I understand it, David is still thinking about it. And so it's kind of moot to talk about it until it actually happens. But that doesn't stop the media. I don't know about you, Greg, but I did notice the kind of the note that the fury that he didn't have a Wikipedia page, in addition to the obvious, well, if I've never heard of him, he can't be anybody. He can't be anybody who's significant or important or qualified or worthy of the Oval Office. Good heavens, you know, I've heard of everyone. But the second thing is, man, if he doesn't have a Wikipedia page, how are journalists supposed to know anything about him? Right? I mean, you know, look, how am I supposed to have my hot take, you know, dashed off within a matter of minutes if I can't go to the easily, publicly edited encyclopedia to learn about him? I'd have to actually read some of his writing, and you can't expect me to do that. So the coverage was about as bad as you would imagine. Somebody over at the Daily Beast uses the term, you know, he's a zero and this absolute nobody in the headline. Now, here's the thing, you know, is David French, you know, largely unknown? Sure. Is he, you know, an extraordinary long shot? Sure. This is like a, you know, the way I'm telling people is like, when your friend says, "I'm going to take a million to one shot," you back him because he's your friend, not because, you know, you think a million to one shot is a great shot. But there's just kind of this sneering disdain for, you know, oh my goodness, who could this guy be? And, you know, he doesn't even have a Wikipedia page. No, but he's got a Bronze Star. Okay, let's have a little bit more respect as we discuss them. And so, you know, this is probably another good indicator of, you know, never mind people running for president. People are thinking about running for town council, state legislature, you know, ever getting involved in the political realm. Well, you know, the first thing people do is they look for the weirdest thing you've ever done or the first thing they can use to take out of context and paint you as a freak. Why would you go into public office? You know, you're just going to get attacked for trying to do something to help your community. As for French and his marriage section, look, this is all in about a book about being deployed and helping to, you know, try to keep their marriage going through what is an exceptionally tough time. I saw one statistic cited that said nearly half of all marriages during deployment either end in divorce or have serious issues with infidelity. Probably one of the toughest things you can put a marriage through. Unsurprisingly, you know, they kind of set up rules and they shared with the world, this is how we handled it. And the fact that's being took, you know, I saw people comparing him to the Taliban because of that. That's the world we live in, Greg. And the media completely lived down to the very lowest of expectations, or at least some corners of the media last night.
Certainly the case. And I think it was one of your tweets in response to this that said, "Trump's on his third marriage. The Clintons have the dysfunctional marriage, yet the Frenches are the weird ones."
As Dennis Miller put it, the Clinton marriage couldn't be any more about convenience if they had installed a Slurpee machine.
Good cap to that martini. All right, on to the second crazy martini of the day. And this was unfolding as we recorded on Tuesday for the Three Martini Lunch. Trump was at Trump Tower holding a press conference after being called out by you and several other reporters for never explaining where the money raised for the veterans back in Iowa in January ended up. Apparently all the checks have been written now, and Trump held a press conference to gloat about that, and it taking only 4 months for the money to get out there. And he took some tough questions from reporters about that and other things. He had a dust-up with Jim Acosta from CNN, who took umbrage that Trump thought the press was dishonest. And then he fired this shot over at Tom Yamas of ABC News.
I could have asked all these groups to come here, and they could have admit, I didn't want to do that. I'm not looking for credit. But what I don't want is when I raise millions of dollars, have people say, like this sleazy guy right over here from ABC. He's a sleaze, in my book. You're a sleaze because you know the facts, and you know the facts well.
So, Jim, it's kind of hard to know who to cheer for here because the press is sleazy and dishonest, yet they were calling to Trump on account on a legitimate topic here. At the same time, though, it would be nice if they actually bothered to hold Hillary Clinton to this type of scrutiny.
Let's go back. This goes back to January in Iowa when Donald Trump said, I donated, past tense, $1 million to the veterans. And several times since then, he said, yes, I gave the donation. And then, of course, it was last week, I believe, it was an interview with the Washington Post editorial board. And he said, you know, okay, so which veterans group got it? When did they get it? They just wanted details. And he's like, I'm not going to tell you that. Well, if you don't do that, people's ears are going to perk up, and they're going to wonder if you're hiding something. And so, lo and behold, it was announced when they reached out to the veterans organization that, yes, Trump did give the donation in late May. I believe the check was dated May 24th. So when you tell people, I donated $1 million, past tense, people tend to think you've already written the check and you've already given them the money, as opposed to saying, well, in a couple of months after I get harangued about it by the media, then I'll finally get around to writing the check. In this case, you know, like Trump is very frustrated and angry and you know, lashing out at the media, but the media was right. He was running around saying that he had given the money and he had not actually given the money. Now, he's given him the money. Good for him. Good job, Donald Trump. Greg, you and I will point out what we consider to be egregious misbehavior on the part of the media pretty regularly on this podcast. And it's out there and it's clear. Katie Couric editing that documentary, Dan Rather, Brian Williams making up stuff. There's plenty of cases of media behaving irresponsibly. Asking somebody when they run around bragging about their charitable donations, say, oh, okay, which charities did you give the money to? How much did you give? And when did you give it? That's not harassment. That's not the liberal media targeting him. That's basic fact-checking in journalism. Trump doesn't accept that, and Trump doesn't like that. But then the second thing is that there's so many egregious cases of this that he's given Trump the cover to say, oh, there goes the liberal media, and quite a few people will believe him because they're so reflexively distrustful of a media that behaves dishonest and liberal.
And it's only getting started because he says he's not going to change for the rest of the campaign, and if he wins in November, he's not going to change as president, even though he said in previous interviews he could change at any time. Instantly he could change.
I guess that proves one of the statements is correct. Give him half credit.
Okay. Well, as we mentioned yesterday, at a slightly less than adult Libertarian National Convention in Orlando over the weekend, as expected, former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson, who was also the 2012 Libertarian nominee, once again named the nominee for 2016. And it's getting more attention this year because of the fact that so many people detest Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Now the theories are out there that he could damage Donald Trump because of the Libertarians' fiscal conservatism. Some say he could damage Hillary Clinton because they're socially liberal and some other issues. Now we have an opinion piece by Ilya Shapiro of the Cato Institute in USA Today with the headline, Gary Johnson could give us President Paul Ryan. One could imagine a scenario where former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson wins his home state and possibly others. He's apparently drawing slightly more support from Clinton than Trump, which would prevent Hillary from simply sweeping pluralities in all the swing states. So if there's no Electoral College majority, this opinion piece goes, there are currently 33 states with Republican majority delegations, 14 with Democratic majorities, and 3 that are tied. Let's say that come January, it's the new House that matters. The Republican-Democratic ratio is 30 to 20. If even 5 of those red states refuse to vote for Trump, there's no majority and no president. But simultaneously, the Senate picks the vice president from the top 2 finishers. If the Democrats take the upper chamber, House Republicans will have to reach a presidential agreement to prevent Hillary's vice presidential nominee from becoming acting president. And if the Republicans keep the Senate, it could be that they prefer Trump's vice president to the Donald himself. Oh, one more possibility. If the Senate is tied or enough senators abstain to again prevent a majority of the whole body, then we'll have 4 years of President Paul Ryan, who as House Speaker is next in line. Wouldn't that be huge? Jim, every twist and turn in this campaign, we have people who suspect that somehow Paul Ryan's going to emerge as president here. The lunacy is just getting better and better.
You know, I really like Ilya, but I feel like if that piece had gone on one more paragraph, Smod would have made an appearance. That's the smoking meteor of death who's running in 2016, pledging to wipe out all of America's problems, as well as wiping out all life on Earth. First of all, in his thinking there, as I understand it, the House has to pick amongst the top three vote getters when they if the election gets thrown to the House. So all of this idea that, well, they could end up picking somebody else, and you know, there was somebody who speculated that they could pick just anybody, and I believe that's not the case here. But if the idea of them being completely deadlocked forever and not being able to pick anybody doesn't strike me as terribly likely. It'd be kind of fascinating just to, you know, for the, teachable moment about what the Constitution says about these scenarios, but I don't think it's going to come down to that. Having said that, if it does come down to a four-way race or a five-way race, depending on whether you get a serious Green candidacy or Bernie Sanders decides to run as an independent, or if French mania catches fire and we decide to make America French again. In a five-way race, you know, then yeah, maybe you have a whole bunch of different candidates winning a whole bunch of different states. But, well, you know, we'll see how this shakes out. I don't think it's going to come to that, but if it does, I think we will have our champion Tracy Martini for the entire year.
Without a doubt. Enjoy your day at CNN. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.